Blog Talk Radio.
Day. So here in New York City, in Queens, and it's what time now? It's 4 p.m. on my time, and doing the show from inside my own office, you know. Anyway, and we have some interesting show to do. I know there are some people that think that Sherlock Holmes is a housing development. Boom. But it's not. Sherlock Holmes, actually the play, The Adventure of Sherlock Holmes, is going to be at Queens Theater at Flushing Meadow Corona Park. Obviously in Queens and in Flushing. Look at that. And the difference with this Sherlock Holmes play is that Sherlock will be played by a woman. Ah, yes. So, how will this pan out? Will it make a difference? Has the script, is there any change in the script? Or how will it all work? Well, why not interview the leading person, Jackie Schramm, who will be portraying the sleuth. And she'll be talking with us, but I just need to do, yeah, you know, we've got sponsors, so let's get a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey, Martha. Why do you smile? I was just thinking, I'm here at Ronnie Brook Farms eating delicious grass, not being injected with some synthetic hormones. I just gave birth to another cutie calf, and don't even have to deal with any bull. I hear you, Mar. You know what they call cows that can't give milk? No, what, Sal? Utter failure. So, where is our big daddy Ronnie? Probably somewhere exercising, doing yogurt. At Ronnie Brook Farms, you'll find the best of dairy products. Our milks vary in butterfat, from non-fat to heavy cream. Enjoy the creamy yogurts from the cup or one that you can simply drink with the best of culture without artificial thickeners or additives. We don't have sour cream. We do have creme fraiche. Butter is better when you can choose cinnamon toast to spread on bread or pancakes. And since we scream for ice cream any time of year, you'll love our 16% butterfat. Do you remember getting bottled milk delivered, opening it to find the cream on the top? That is how you'll find our sweet-tasting cream-lined milk. I'll hand it to you, Sal. Our milk may get past your eyes, but certainly not homogenized. Ronnie Brook Farms, where cows always seem to be in a good mood. Check us out at www.ronniebrook.com.
Oh, yeah. I know right after this I'm going to have a glass of milk. But in the meantime, we'll open up our microphones, and now we have Jackie on the line. Hello, Jackie.
Hi, Merle. How are you?
Oh, just fabulous. Is this the first time that you're playing the role of Sherlock Holmes, by the way?
It is. I don't know if there has been a female Sherlock Holmes that I know of on stage, at least, before.
Yeah, that should... I'm going to have to start thinking about all these plays and there's a substitute, if you could change the genders and, would it make a difference? But I'm really curious, how did you get this role and what made them decide to do it with a woman?
So the concept came from our director, Desiree Sanchez. It's with the Aquila Theater Company. And she actually, in adapting the stories to the stage, was doing a bunch of research, and she was watching a lot of the old BBC Sherlock specials, and she has two young daughters. And I think that she was with her youngest daughter, who I believe is 8, and was watching one of the episodes, and her daughter just turned to her and was like, "Mom, can't Sherlock be a girl?" And she just looked at her daughter and she said, "Yeah, you know what? She can." And then decided to make that her concept and sort of put it in place, and then adapted the script. Within our play, we tell three of the short Sherlock Holmes stories: The Adventure of the Copper Beeches, The Adventure of the Yellow Face, and The Scandal in Bohemia. So those are the three stories that we've got woven together sort of as one play. And it came from our director's daughter.
Okay, so in other words, it's three stories, not like one story, then a second story, and a third story, but taking all three stories and making into like one script.
It is one continuous play, but it is three separate stories. One complete mystery that gets solved, and then the next two that follow.
Okay. What have you done prior to this, by the way?
I've been acting for a long time. I mean, ever since I was in my first play when I was 4. But I trained in musical theater first, and then just recently got my MFA from the New School for Drama in New York. But prior to that, I've been doing regional theater with Florida Repertory Theater. I did another national tour prior to this. I toured with a play called The 39 Steps, which is an adaptation of
I have to tell you, it was like, I explained to people, if you've never seen a Hitchcock movie, you'll find it humorous. If you've seen these Hitchcock movies, you'll be hysterical.
It's a lot of, there's a ton of Hitchcock references in it.
You know, you got to look for things. I think I have this flashback. I remember there was this little Hitchcock going like on a string going across.
Yeah, there's a sequence of shadow puppets in that.
And it's like you have to know that in thing that he appears in all of his movies in a cameo. I mean, why I said
There's a lot of Easter eggs. interesting because the style in which that we are doing Sherlock, I find sort of comparable to the 39 Steps. We have like sort of similar, because they have similar kind of followings as well. Ours is not as outrageous as 39 Steps, but it does have similar elements in the, you know, that there are some references that only Sherlockians will get, and there's there's, you know, it's kind of, there's a changing of locations, and you know, a trunk comes forward and becomes something else, and that kind of thing happens a lot throughout our show, which is, I think, very similar in a way to the style of the 39 Steps.
Yeah. Now, if I don't follow, like, the Sherlock Holmes, do you think I would still get things?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's not, I think, but what's interesting about the way that we've adapted these stories to the stage is that our director, she wanted to be very close to the text, to Arthur Conan Doyle's words in the Victorian sort of language. And so a lot of the lines are drawn, you know, point blank from the page to the stage. And they are, and the stories, that, I think that what becomes interesting is how we, and what the problem, you know, the problems that we had to solve in rehearsal were, you know, how do we make this theatrically interesting? As it's sort of the formula of most of the Sherlock Holmes stories, because they were short stories that were written in a magazine for a periodical, were that Conan Doyle wanted something where you could know the characters well. You could know Watson and Sherlock and Lestrade and Mrs. Hudson and, you know, all the regular cast of characters, but then still be able to pick it up the next week. And if you missed a week, it wouldn't matter. So he sort of had a formula for the way that his stories kind of went. And a lot of them start with somebody coming into the apartment, you know, telling their story. They have some big problem, and Sherlock going, okay, thank you very much. I'm going to go do some things. Watson, will you come along with me? And then we'll, and then it sort of ends up in this big adventure. And then the person who has the problem gets brought in back at the end, and it sort of all comes together. And Sherlock explains all these things that everybody else missed along the way. I think that the way that we've translated that theatrically is pretty interesting, because it's, you know, if we were to just follow the means of the story, then if somebody came into the apartment and just spoke for a long time, then it wouldn't be, I mean, it would be pretty boring. So the way that we have, if, for example, in our first story, the character of Violet Hunter comes in and she starts talking about how she had this strange interview for a governess position. And then the stage sort of shifts and comes alive, and she's still telling the story, but we see the story in the way that Sherlock is imagining it, as if it's playing out
right
in Sherlock's mind.
Okay. And so that, what is the second story about?
The second story is a man comes to Sherlock, and is his name is Grant Monroe, and he is upset because his wife is acting strange, and he doesn't know why. And there is a cottage nearby that has an unusual yellow face that keeps on appearing in the window, and the neighbors are not very kind and sort of dismissive, and there's something that is strained in his relationship with his wife, and she is disappearing, and he doesn't know why, and so he comes and tries to, and that's the sort of the mystery. I won't say how it goes, because I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah.
And then the third story is perhaps the most well-known story, which is a Scandal in Bohemia, and that is where the character of Irene Adler is introduced. That story has become even more popular because of the BBC Sherlock series in the last few years, and Irene Adler was a major character in that interpretation of the stories. But it is the complete short story from the book. So it's the king of Bohemia comes, and he has written Miss the adventurous Irene Adler some letters, and he is needing to get them back before she can blackmail him. So it is the adventure of trying to secure the photograph back for the king.
You know, but I get this flashback of watching an episode of Doogie Howser, M.D., where he did this. I guess it was a dream, whole dream sequence of his playing, you know, Sherlock Holmes, whatever kind of thing. And as you're saying this,
oh, really?
It's like, now, yeah, and the funny thing is, now I'm thinking about it, it's, you know, and somebody comes in and, you know, that's exactly what you're saying. So
yeah,
he did
yeah.
this takeoff that sounds exactly how it goes. But something, you know, that's pretty cool. So do you think, as far as in terms of the script, has anything had to get like rewritten? Well, I guess that they're adapting it from stories, right? So it's not so the fact that you're a female, it's not that in the stories that they're using in terms of pronouns.
Yeah, the pronoun, it's mostly just the pronouns being changed, and that was sort of intentional about, you know, trying to just, you know, just keep tell the stories, and that I'm not, it's not like a lot of, you know, you'll have actresses taking on male roles, and they'll play them as men, but our director really wanted to make sure that we were, you know, that is, I am playing it as a woman, and that there is there's a femininity about it, and that there is, I think that what is highlighted by changing it is, for me, a lot of the time is that it's just that things, lines that would have been said by a male Sherlock just come out differently because it's a female, because it's a female perspective.
Right.
For example, in the last story, Watson says something, where's the photograph, do you think? Her lawyer, and I say, oh, I don't think so. Women are very secretive, and we like to do our own secreting. That was a line that Sherlock in the book said about women, but it changes when it is about, when it's from a female perspective, a first person perspective. I think it adds an interesting sort of color to it, because Sherlock as a person was really completely defiant of his society and of the times that he was. I mean, even in all the stories, Sherlock is not even recognized very much by the police, even though they secretly use him for all of his intense powers. But he's not, he's not an official detective. He's a consulting detective, the only one of its kind, as he says.
Right.
And so it is... So he, you know, there's this line where it says that he loathed every form of society with his whole bohemian soul. And I think that that's just sort of heightened when it's a woman, because it's not only somebody that is going against all the social norms of the times and society, just in the activities and profession that they have created for themselves, but is also... than a woman and wearing pants and solving mysteries. So I think it's kind of cool. And it sort of also then in the third story especially highlights, I think, what the actions that Irene Adler takes at the end of the story.
Right. So So this is Aquila Theater's idea to do this. Is that what it is?
To make Sherlock Holmes a woman?
Yeah.
Well, it was certainly our director's idea for her concept
okay.
of the play.
So does the director do the directing for Aquila Theater usually?
For
or was
Aquila?
It brought on for this?
Yes, yeah. Our director is, she's also the artistic director. It's sort of run by her and her husband, Peter. And she's been directing for the company and sort of running it for the last few years now. And Aquila's sort of mantra is telling classics in a new way. So they usually do some form of a Shakespeare play and then another major piece of literature. At least that's what they've done for the last few years. And this year decided upon Sherlock Holmes, and then the idea evolved with having a woman, which I think is great because otherwise, I don't know another time when I would get to play this role.
That's true. this is true. Actually, it's too bad it's starting in April since this is Women's History Month. This would even be better.
Yeah. We've been performing all over. I mean, we have a performance tonight in Vermont.
So when you do this, so the it's not debuting at Queen's Theater.
It is. It'll be the New York City debut of Sherlock. But we've been. The company has been touring for 9 months. They started
with you as Sherlock for 9 months.
I actually joined the company a bit later. There's five of us in the company. The rest of the cast is all international. They're actually all from. They're all based out of London currently, and they came to the States in August to rehearse for 6 weeks because we do two shows in repertory. We do The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes and Romeo and Juliet. So they rehearsed both plays for 6 weeks and then toured from September through the end of November. And then the woman that was playing both of the roles that I'm currently playing wasn't able to do the spring portion of the tour. So I auditioned in the city and then was cast. And came into rehearsal with them at the beginning of December, rehearsed for a couple weeks, and then I started with them in January. And we started touring, I think, January 13th, and then we tour through the end of this month, and then we start in New York in Queen's Theater.
That's great. How have people received the fact that a female is playing the lead?
It's gone really well. I've unfortunately not been able to talk to many people after the shows, but the show has been really well received. We've received a lot of standing ovations. People find it very funny, which is good.
So you've seen reviews then?
We've gotten a couple of reviews. The sad thing about touring is that in the way that we do is that we're not in a place much for a long amount of time really to get somebody to come and review it often. We did get one review recently from our performance in Hammond, Louisiana, and they asked audience members. They said, "Did it bother you it was a female Sherlock?" And they said, "No, it was just different." And it is, yeah, and I think that it's just they follow the story and are just taken along the ride with what, how we are telling these three stories, and that it's I mean, it definitely changes it for sure. You know, it is, it's not going to be your purest Sherlock Holmes, because Sherlock Holmes was originally a man, but I
right.
think that in 2016 that maybe we could shake it up a bit. I think that's
sure.
okay.
Yeah. That's fine with me. So the show is going to be April. I don't have the date in front of me. Do you have it in front of you?
It's April 1st through 3rd at Queen's Theater in the Park.
Okay. So, all right. See, what happens, and this is probably could be typical, I'm not sure, when there's a short run, the papers prefer to do previews so people can see the show, and then they don't review it. I think that's the kind of thing as to what happens.
Yeah.
So what has happened? So when I'm writing for the Times Ledger, what they want, that's why they want the preview, so people can go see the show. And then I'm going, but. Now, I happen that I write for another newspaper in Queens, and the newspaper in Queens is, okay, there's nobody telling me what to do. I can go see the show, and I can review it, too, with the
on your own schedule.
Yeah. So I might do that. I'm have to, you know, I'm going to look at my schedule. So if I can attend it as well, I'm going to do that. And this way I could kind of write a review on it, you know, so they'll be, you know.
Oh, Merle, it'd be great.
Yeah. It's like, when you said that people are not reviewing, I'm going, but then how do you get the feedback? But then this way I could, you know, I can kind of do both. I'm sure they'll have no problem in my going there to, you know, to review it. But I wanted to also ask you, you were saying something about you also do Romeo and Juliet. There's a reason I'm asking. I just, because I'm going on a press trip and I didn't, and are you, I don't suppose it's some coincidence that Romeo and Juliet is going to be in Annapolis, Maryland, is it?
That's not us.
Okay.
I'm sure that there is a lot of, at any given moment, that I'm sure there's 10 or more Romeo and Juliet happening in the country.
And I'm a Shakespeare company down there, and I, you know, saw that they're doing that. And then, you know, and I was just curious if that would have been out. that it was the same people, you know, but that is okay. That's okay. I have a feeling it's not going to be as humorous as this particular play that you're doing.
Yeah, they're very different. Very different.
Oh,
plays.
Sure. You know, I don't know if you heard that first line I said on the air. Did you? Some people think that Sherlock Holmes is a housing development.
Is what? Sorry?
Sherlock Holmes is a housing development. Sherlock Holmes.
I get it. Oh, there it is. It's a pun. I got it now. Here I am.
Okay.
There was traffic.
Okay. It's an old line that they say about, you know, somebody who's, you know, not too keen, you know. I think Sherlock Holmes is housing and that manual labor is a Mexican worker.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. But anyway. From Queen's Theater in the Park, how much of a time do you have before you're at the next place you're touring?
Well, Queen's Theater is actually ends. It is the last stop on our tour, but we have and it is our New York debut of Sherlock Holmes. Okay. So that is, Queen's Theater is sort of where we are debuting Sherlock. And then 3 weeks after that, for the next 3 weeks following, so I think that starting on the 8th through the 24th of April, for those 3 weekends, Aquila is doing a 25-year celebration of being in existence, and is doing a sort of a festival of three works that we have going at this time. So we're doing, we'll be doing both of the shows that we've been touring around with. So we'll be doing Sherlock and Romeo and Juliet, and then we'll also, Aquila will be doing a an adaptation of the Greek play Philoctetes, and that will feature mostly veterans, and then I believe Richard Chaves, I think, is the man that is playing Philoctetes, is an actor as well. So it'll be him, and then I think the rest of the cast is made up of veterans. And I think it's with something called the Warrior Project or something like that.
Oh, that's that sounds good. So
So we'll get to be in one place for a while, which is nice, which will be
a nice change. It's funny, so like when you after you're saying that, it's like, yeah, I realize that that's an issue that when you're doing a short thing, but
yeah, because a lot of the time reviews are meant to say, hey, this was great, go see it.
Yeah.
Somebody did that, I mean, we'd already be gone.
Yeah, that unless you have somebody like the opening night, and then it goes right into a daily paper where it gets, goes into a daily, and then people, what's coming on for the weekend, and someone sees it like whatever, and then on a Thursday or whatever. What are the days that you're doing this, by the way? Are they?
We have one show on Friday, and then we have two shows Saturday, and then one show on Sunday. I believe that they are, Friday is 2 o'clock, Saturday is 2 and 8, and then Sunday is at 3.
Okay. In terms of your audiences, I have to, what do you call it? Like, when you have people who have subscriptions versus they're going to see a show. Do you notice, do you tend to see that more?
A lot of the places that we tour to, there'll be a lot of people that'll have a subscription base, and they'll come and see a lot of different things, because the sort of the houses that we go to won't have a resident theater company. I believe that Queen's Theater is just sort of starting more of a resident theater company, but still does a lot of touring things. A friend of mine was actually in production of theirs this past fall, To Kill a Mockingbird.
What happened? Yeah, one of the places closed, so I guess they're coming over to Queen's Theater. I think that's what was going on. Yeah, I saw.
Oh yeah, they also, I think Titan Theater Company also does their shows there.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
places won't have a resident company, because it's more money to have a resident company than to have somebody tour something that is already established and come in and just do it. We have a lot of places that we've gone to, there've been a lot of subscribers, and sometimes we'll do pre-show talks and talk to some people that they say, oh, we come to all the shows here, and this kind of thing. We've had some Sherlockians come to the show, which has been fun. There was a group in one place They called themselves Watson's Neglected Patients. and they had, they all came in costume, and it was great.
Okay. Well, I hope it gets a lot of publicity. I have no idea if the other local papers are going to, pick up on this and publish it or whatever. But at least we got, well, hopefully there'll be two, because I could, as a preview and an actual review. But but most likely I'm going to go, because it sounds interesting enough for me to see, as opposed to, I don't know if I want to say that. kind of thing. But it does. It sounds like, and I'll probably laugh remembering all of the things I've seen on TV that they make fun of it, of Sherlock Holmes. And go, yeah, that's why they did that. Ah, now I get it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But, okay, so I'm really glad you, spoke with me. And
yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, and I guess, what do you call it? You can have who's ever PR company or whatever. I'll need to get a photo, but I can't take it off the website, so they have to send a photo to me.
All right, yeah. I'll let them know.
Okay. All right, well, have an absolute fabulous day. And
you
hope
too.
We're not going to yell April Fools on April 1st. No, there's no show. Go.
Yeah,
that'd
be terrible.
All right. I said, have a great day. Thanks
down.
Again. All right, Jackie. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, well, Yeah, I'm going to go see the show. I think it sounds like it's going to be really cute. And with this show, I'm going to go end the show, because I think I need to have... No, it's not today. The glass of milk, I need to have it. I'm sorry, just throw this in. I got a little bit of time. I went to this place, Agner's Chocolates, today. And... I'm a chocoholic, so I can't just have any chocolate. It has to really be good chocolate, and this is good chocolate. But my thing with chocolate that I absolutely love is hazelnut paste. That's my craving to have it. You know, like people have Nutella. I can't eat Nutella, because it's got all other stuff. It's not real and whatever. Okay, so with hazelnut paste, and even when you go to chocolate shops or whatever, when they have hazelnut paste, sometimes it's not like, it could be flavor, it could be this, it could be, because the hazelnut paste is, and you just can't, like, go to the store and just say, can I have hazelnut paste? Like, you can get almond paste, like, from marzipan. So, anyway, what happened is that the owner told me, what's his name, Mark Libertini owns Acne Chocolates. It's in Forest Hills in Queens here. And he had decided to make his own hazelnut paste, because he comes from actually being a baker. So I was there today. I said, so Mark, did you make it yet? And he said, yeah, I did. I said, well, I have to taste it. I mean, oh, this is a killer. It's a killer. I mean, you don't really even need the cocoa powder that they add to have a chocolate flavor kind of to it for Nutella. And I wouldn't even put it on bread anyway. I'm just going to take, I just have spoons of it. Why waste the calories, But the thing is it's like totally outrageously delicious. It's like the best hazelnut paste I've had, better than, you know, when it comes out, it usually it's like comes out of a can kind of thing. So, but then he also introduced me. He was making, he's not doing it yet. He's testing it out. Not pecans, let me see. Was I think pecans, is that something? I think pecan paste that he was making. And I said, okay. And then I got a taste. And it was also, like, awesome. I never heard of pecan paste. Oh, this is like, anyway, so I'm just saying this because this is, I have some in the house. I'm going to have, like, just a couple of spoonfuls with a glass of the Roddybrook Farm milk. Yeah, this is both totally outrageous. I haven't even played the other one I have. I have, oh, God, I should put this. Fairy Tale Brownies. Oh, I have, let me see, do I have time? Fairy Tale Brownies. Well, here's a it's short, so then I'll explain, okay.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And the thing is, with the brownies, at least, you can get this at www.brownies.com. I mean, that's really the best brownies. So now I got to call them up. I got to email them, call them up or whatever to tell them, because they must send me some more brownies because I want to try this. Oh, God, with the hazelnut paste, that's got to be freaking awesome. I mean, come on. By the way, I took two of my rubber chickens with me to Agnes Chocolate. I took the little baby chicks because, you know, with Easter coming up, children must have chocolate, and of course, I have took a picture of the, they, you know, bit off the ear, and you know, that's the first thing that everybody does. But anyway, I'm going to, I don't know, with wait a minute, they heard. Oh. I just have to put this out. So then we tested something out. We took some of this hazelnut paste and put a shot of coffee in it. You know, we're going to have to try this with a shot of espresso. But I did it with a shot of coffee into the, mixed it in this. Oh, oh my God. I mean, you know, like, it's like, I don't know if you've ever gotten coffee with flavoring kind of thing. No way does that compare. I mean, there's no, it's like, oh, it's like the real thing. So now we got to talk about, you know, how they're going to sell it, since they make coffee there, and, you know, and they make their own cocoa too. I mean, their own, they use the chocolate to make hot cocoa. So anyway, so okay, I'm going. I'm gonna leave you. So everybody have a great day, evening or whatever you're doing. Yeah.